The characters in Mark Helprin's new book, The Pacific and Other Stories, range around the world and the whole range of life, from blood to opera to baseball. A wounded British paratrooper in Germany, reaching for his daughter's hand. A hungry laundress in Venice who becomes a diva, a September 11th widow, a lonely Israeli army reservist, and a putz of a 14-year-old religious student who becomes the savior of the New York Yankees. Mark Helprin is among that short list of writers acclaimed as the finest fiction writer of our times. The Pacific and Other Stories is his new collection of short stories. Several have previously appeared in The New Yorker and The Atlantic. Mr. Helprin, who's won a Pen Faulkner Award and others for previous books that include Ellis Island and Other Stories, Winter's Tale, Soldier of the Great War, now joins us from Charlottesville, Virginia. Mr. Helprin, thanks very much for being with us.
Delighted.
Is there a theme to this collection? I apologize for such an obvious one.
It's about many things, but there is no single agenda. It's about art. It's about making amends. It's about memory, childhood, marriage, sacrifice, honor, perseverance, courage, war, putting materialism in its place, infatuation, resolution, the Holocaust, baseball, God, redemption, loyalty, show business, dictatorship, love for one's family, New York in 1869, the loss of a child, Herman Melville, adultery, World War I, the mountains, the shtetl, idolatry, technology, ocean racing, dying, the nature of love, the Middle East, the Second World War, California, and redemption denied. And that's a partial list.
That's an awfully good answer, Mr. Helprin. I have to ask about your story of perfection. 14-year-old Hasidic Jew who feels called on to become the savior of the New York Yankees.
The story arose in 1954, actually, when I, as a child, was taken to Yankee Stadium to the only baseball game that I ever saw in my life. And I was brought there by Alan Funt. Remember Candid Camera?
Of course.
And we got there early, and we went to the left field fence. And he stood at the fence bellowing, "Hey, Mickey! Hey, Mickey! Hey, Mickey!" Because Mickey Mantle was at the plate, Yogi Berra was catching, and Billy Martin was pitching. There was nobody in the stadium. I mean, a few people, but virtually no one. And Alan Funt just yelled this for half an hour until finally the three of them walked over. It looked like they were going to hit us with a baseball bat. You know, they were really irritated. And they came over to us, and we then spent about 10 or 15 minutes talking to them because Alan Funt had filmed a Wheaties commercial with Mickey Mantle, so he knew him. And Mickey Mantle didn't realize that when Alan was yelling at him. But anyway, in the story, Mickey Mantle thinks that H-A-S-I-D, Hasid, as in Hasidic Jew, is pronounced Hasid. And the confusion of language is such that they tell him that he is a Hasid, which he thinks is a Hasid, and he doesn't quite understand that.
I mean, this is a real boy's fantasy, in a sense, the teenager who becomes the savior of the New York Yankees. And yet, in a sense, that aspect of the story is lost on this young man because, if I might put it in parlance, he might say, well, you know, what does he know from baseball?
Oh, he knows nothing about it, but he never heard of baseball. Yeah. He never heard of the Yankees or Yankee Stadium or anything. He mistook it for the House of Ruth. He thought that the House of Ruth was in the Bronx and that they were in trouble. So he went up to find them. And his purpose was actually to see if there could be perfection in the universe. If after the Holocaust it was possible to have a moment of perfection, because if there were, then that was the beginning of the answer to the question, if there is God, how could he have allowed not just the Holocaust, but everything that the Holocaust may symbolize as well, you know, the suffering of anybody anywhere in the dreadful ways that they do.
You have a story principally set in Venice, a man who becomes a impresario. You referred to it somewhat as in a sense, a man paying penance for making dreams come true. This is a man who had discovered a laundress and facilitated the ability of the rest of the world to share her gift.
She's the leading soprano in the world, and he is her agent. And it's a matter of great regret because she was actually happy before he plucked her out of it. She was a laundress hanging up sheets, and she had a man that she loved. He couldn't handle her fame, and he committed suicide. But it didn't end there, because what happens is the impresario is ordered by this diva to go to Venice to, as she says, check out the Bellini, the paintings that have been restored in the Accademia. And when he goes to Venice, he's in the Accademia looking at a painting which reminds him of his daughter, and he hears a beautiful song coming from outside on the street, and he knows immediately this is the best singer in the world who's singing on the street for contributions in a hat. And he rushes out to find her. She is an Estonian, and she has her boyfriend who is a guitarist. And the story then proceeds with the relations between the impresario and these two people whom he finds on the street, and the imbalance between the guitarist and the singer is just as immense as it was between the diva and the soldier, because the guitarist cannot make it, and the impresario knows that. So he hesitates to offer the singer all the things that he knows will come in train with his representation. And in the end, he gives them money and he advises them to go back to Estonia to think about it, and et cetera, et cetera. And this is his way of making amends. So what happens is that he finds a way to restore the color of his life by making these amends very late.
It's interesting to me, being a little bit familiar with your background. You were educated at Harvard, Princeton, and Oxford. Went into these Israeli armed forces and the British merchant navy. Seems to me you write a good deal more about soldiers than you do about academics and entertainers, for that matter.
Yes, I do. I once had an argument with a friend of mine that lasted about 8 hours. He said that a poet living in a garret is more of a hero than a soldier who gives his life. And I said, now, wait a minute, you know, if you die, that's it. You don't have another chance. You can't look forward to much else. And we had this long argument. The reason I brought that up is that when you're talking about war or anything in which physical death is the risk, it has a tremendous a reverberation for everyone, because people know about war and they dread it and they fear it and they have suffered because of it.
Daughters appear a lot in your stories.
I have two.
Well, there's your answer. My pronunciation is going to be bad. Charlotte of the Utrecht.
Utrechtseweg. It means the road to Utrecht.
It's so beautiful and so sad. This is a British paratrooper, and, I almost can't bring myself to utter it. His thoughts as he is involved in an enterprise that is both, he firmly believes, protecting his daughter, and yet is the one thing that will prevent them from seeing each other again.
This is a major in the battle in Operation Market Garden, the Battle of Arnhem in World War II, when we overextended our forces and dropped a lot of paratroopers where, as it turns out, we couldn't support them. And it's a very simple story. It just tells how he left England and saw his daughter for the last time. His daughter was manning an anti-aircraft gun in Chelsea, and she was more or less the daughter of the regiment. Everyone's heart went out to her because she was very clumsy, and she tripped, and she dropped her books, and she wore big, thick glasses. She was very beautiful, even though she had the glasses. And every man in the regiment, even the coarsest man, felt protective of her. And then he gets in a glider, and they come in on the field, and I describe the combat, and he goes down. And as he's dying, and it takes him a while to die, he envisions his daughter.
You're left with the impression that she, his daughter, is put on this earth precisely to get him to reach out.
That's true. It's just what the final moment is an imagination of a man's last, and how in the final moment he can close off his life in a way that will somehow balance it out and make something of beauty and something that's worthwhile, something ineffable and very, very powerful.
Mr. Helpern, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
Speaking with us from Charlottesville, Virginia, Mark Helpern. His new book is The Pacific and Other Stories. To hear an extended interview with Mark Helpern and read an excerpt from his book, you can come to our website, npr.org. Thank you. This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon.